Welcome to the Hoops Hype Podcast. I'm Alex Kennedy. This is episode number 216. We post new episodes twice a week, so be sure to check back and subscribe. Joining me today is a 14-year NBA veteran and two-time All-Star, Caron Butler. He's on the board of directors for the NBA's Retired Players Association. He's also a board member for the Vera Institute of Justice, which tries to drive change and improve justice systems across the United States. He's a lifelong social justice and criminal justice reform advocate. Caron, thanks for joining me. How are you?
Considering the circumstances, I'm doing good, you know, better than I was, you know, a week ago. And, you know, just, you know, happy to just be trying to unplug on this Saturday evening.
For sure. Well, I appreciate you joining us here to discuss this. You wrote an excellent piece for the Players Tribune about your experiences with law enforcement growing up in Wisconsin. You know, you were arrested more than 15 times, which we've discussed here on this podcast. And almost every single interaction you had with police was negative. Sometimes they'd arrest you for, you know, having your pants sagging, as you wrote about. When you see people like George Floyd and Eric Garner and others getting murdered by cops, do you think that could have been me?
Absolutely. And it's deflating because when you look at where we're at in society, the reason why this is a huge deal is for a couple of reasons. Give a huge credit to Steven Jackson and his relationship with George Floyd, his twin, because he spoke up, and he spoke up numerous times on a large platform, and he had access to, you know, media and friends that can spread the message and the word on this inequality of justice immediately. Another thing is, you know, when you look at the platforms that we've been given, successful as we are, some form of success, we try to inspire as much as possible. But it's definitely up to us to move the needle on social injustices, injustice in this country as a whole, and raise awareness on equality and educate and inform as much as possible. And I've been doing this for years, you know, for my entire life since I've been through the adversity that I had to overcome. And this is no different for me now. I'm just happy that we have young people from all walks of life that's unified and that's making sure that awareness is happening and it's changed.
For sure. You attended two protests. We were talking about it before we started recording, but you've been to two different protests. I know you went with your 20-year-old son, Caron Jr., to one, and you were actually just at another right before we started recording here. How many people were out there at the protest, and what was the energy like?
It was thousands out there, and the reason why it was so impactful, as we touched on, was just it was people from all walks of life. And it was young people, it was old people, multiple generations that just rallied next to each other and around each other for the good. Now, imagine this. Mental Health Awareness Month just passed in May. And depression and social anxiety and all these things that the world has been dealing with, you know, from an economic standpoint, unemployment is 40 million plus. And still, people are putting that in the sacrifice aside to say, you know what? It is so important that we get out here and march together and rally around each other for justice and equality for all people, and especially Black people in America, because the history has always been swept under the rug. And what happens when you continue to sweep history under the rug, trauma occurs. And when trauma continues to go unaddressed, that's a huge issue. What do I mean by that, Alex? You know, when you think about the old Jim Crow, the new Jim Crow, when you think about slavery, and you think about mass incarceration, when you think about the civil rights movement, this is how we got here. Because a lot of people don't understand how we got here. This is how we got here. And then you think about all the inequality that haven't been captured on film. Emmett Till, you know, Medgar Evers, you know, so many others. And then all of a sudden now we're at a place where, look at this. Look, America, this is what we're dealing with. And now we're asking you as a society and as elected officials to make sure that this doesn't happen again. make an example out of these individuals that did this to human beings and expedite the justice process, because this is justice that have not been had and fought for far too long.
Absolutely. And I mean, we've seen more punishments and consequences for officers now due to cell phones than we've seen ever through the justice system. So, I mean, thank God that, you know, these things are being captured on video, because otherwise they would just keep happening and no one would be talking about them or knowing about them. But I've heard so many stories of Black fathers sitting down with their son and teaching them about racial injustice and police brutality, walking through exactly what not to do and what to do when you've been pulled over by the cops. Are those conversations that you've had with your son? And if so, when did you start having those chats?
It's not just Black men, it's Black women, it's Black, our culture as a whole. You know, I've had that conversation with my son when he was old enough to understand that I'm different. And because we had the luxury of, you know, attending prestigious schools, you know, private educated schools, he immediately understood that he was in classrooms. They were in classrooms, because I'm a father of four girls, one son. They was in classrooms that no one else looked like them was in these spaces, or it was one or two in the entire school possibly. You know what I'm saying? So I always had that lesson and that, you know, just a resource of, you know, just informing them. Because when you look at our educational system, it's fractured as well. And that's something that's going to have to be addressed also, because you don't get taught the American history in the right way when you go to school. Yeah. That's why a lot of people are running around dumbfounded on where we are at today, because Black history isn't talked about as much. When February rolls around, you immediately say, oh, this is Black History Month, and we celebrate, you know, our great leader and Dr. Martin Luther King. People may talk about Langston Hughes, Medgar Evers, something like that, Malcolm X, and then that's it. But how did they become great leaders? We don't talk about the history, and we continue to celebrate history that wasn't real, and Christopher Columbus and things like that, but we don't talk about the history of slavery. We don't talk about how Black Americans built this country. We don't talk about the history of Black Wall Street and Tulsa and what happened, how it was burned down, how people was lynched, because it's uncomfortable to have those conversations in schools, and the educators are uncomfortable because they don't even know the history. Some of them are like, I didn't know that. But that's important, because it's part of American history. You cannot write off 400 plus years of history like that. So I've always sat down with my children, me and my wife, and over-informed them, because our family come from Columbus, Mississippi. They grew up in the cotton fields, and we migrated north to a predominantly white state. And we had to integrate ourselves into that. And my family always shared those stories with me. So it was so important for me to share those stories with my kids. And also being out there with my legacy, my 20-year-old son, as you touched on, out there marching, that was everything. It was a feeling like no other, because that is a moment that he will never forget. The picture was captured by my daughter. She'll never forget it. And also, this, that image, I know that it lives on the Player Tribune. I know it's an image that kind of went viral now. He'll see that and remember that moment for the rest of his life and know why we was there. And we really had our hands in on change.
Yeah, for sure. It was a powerful image. It's been great to see so many NBA players who are protesting, donating money, raising awareness. Some have started their own protests. I went through and counted, and there were over 40 players who participated in protests. And those are just the ones that we know. I'm sure there's plenty more that haven't posted about it or haven't been spotted. It's just incredible to see. You know, how proud are you of your fellow NBA players for stepping up and emerging as leaders during this time?
Yeah, look, I'm super proud of them. You know, doing something. That was my message to everyone in the Players Tribune, is from all walks of life, not just the NBA. It's not a Black thing. It's an everybody thing. Everybody should be trying to do something because it is a problem. And if you don't think it's a problem, then you're the problem, because it is a problem. You cannot deny that it's racism in America at an all-time high right now, and that it doesn't exist. That would be denying it to the fullest, and it is a problem. So I'm proud of all these guys for getting out here and just fighting a good fight, because this is something that I've been in the midst of doing, you know, my entire active career as a basketball player, and now serving on the board of the Beer Institute, doing more than ever now, you know, because we go into the system, we go into the correctional systems, and all we talk about is social injustice. And that's been a target for me and something that's been close to my heart, that I make sure I try to change the system as much as possible.
You wrote that you're tired of people telling you, "I don't know what to say," and staying quiet. And I agree with you. You know, we saw 29 of 30 NBA teams show their support either with a statement or by having their head coach speak out. The only team that hasn't done anything publicly is the New York Knicks. You know, there was a memo from James Dolan circulating when he tried to explain his silence away, basically. But dozens of employees are furious, and I'd imagine some of the players are really upset and hurt. What are your thoughts on the Knicks staying quiet throughout all of this? And if you were playing for the Knicks right now, how would you feel about that?
I don't even know. It's like every opportunity or chance that, you know, Mr. Dolan get a chance to do something right, it's almost like he's pivoting in the space to go out his way to do the opposite. And that probably worked in the business space where you disturb the market, but this is not a business thing. This is a humane thing. And I think that he made a bad decision not speaking up on it. And I don't know what he'd do privately or anything like that, but you should take a stance on, you know, justice and what's right and wrong. And I think that at the end of the day, your legacy is extremely important, and you cannot, I've never seen a U-Haul truck, you know, attached to a hearse or anything like that. So people remember you from, you know, your good deeds and what you did for mankind. And to say nothing in one of the biggest moments, I think, in our lifetime that we've been able to experience and all rally around and have a hand in and be a part of, and to be absent in that moment, that's just, that tells you a lot. And I know that a lot of players are like, you know, how can I go run through a brick wall for this organization, you know, and understand and know that my rights probably don't really matter to this individual. It's an eye-opener for a lot of people. It's an eye-opener for a lot of people that's on social media that have friends from different walks of life that didn't stand in solidarity and say anything. It's going to be different going forward. And if you did not stand on the side of right and on justice, you know, you will be looked at differently. And that just let the world know that you have no substance to you.
Yeah, I agree. And it's great to see people being held accountable for their views. You have such an interesting perspective here because, you know, you not only have you been arrested numerous times and had negative experiences, but you've also been involved with Champions of Change, law enforcement and youth. You're close with Rick Geller, who was a police officer that gave you the benefit of the doubt and, you know, really helped you when you were younger. And we talked about that last time you were on the podcast. And I know you've met with many officers over the years, too, like having lunch with cops in Sacramento and different things like that. You know, I've heard people saying we should defund the police. There's people say, or actually Minneapolis is looking at dismantling their police department altogether. Others are saying we need to improve the training, make it tougher to become a cop. You know, what are some things that you would like to see happen that would improve things given your knowledge of the situation and, you know, your ability to put yourself on both sides here?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost, you have to make sure that, you know, there's certain jobs that can't afford bad apples. You know, when you're as a professional, we're professionals for a reason because we're the best at our jobs. So when you throw me the basketball and you're a shooter, you're a professional shooter, that means 8 or 9 times out of 10, you're going to hit your mark because you're a sniper, you're a professional shooter. And certain jobs, this can't afford to have bad apples. It really can't. And once you seek out those bad apples from an observation standpoint on conversations and perspectives, you know immediately they should not be tossed into an environment or a community which they have no insight or understanding of. I think a lot of the policing and where a lot of problems lie, and I talk to a lot of people across the nation, here's the problem. You're patrolling areas that you're not from, that you have no connection to. You have no relationships with community leaders or people in the community, so you don't know. You're scared from the jump when you're patrolling the area that you're unfamiliar with. And then when something happens, you immediately overreact instead of doing protocol stuff. And that's what usually happens, and that's why, you know, you have so many, you know, drastic things happening across the board, where it's, you know, overkill situations, where it's overreacting from the law enforcement side. But then you have good officers as well that get it, you know, that understand that they know how to tame their emotions and not get into emotional situations. And like Rick Geller did in my situation, and he did not charge me. Usually in a situation like that where you're in a drug raid, black man found drugs, he go to jail. Geller was like, I know these drugs aren't his. Like, why would I just put this case on this kid just because I can? And that's the humane side of things that I'm talking about. That's the judgment side that I'm talking about. That's because he patrolled that community his entire career thing is what I'm talking about. He understands the impact of drug-infested neighborhoods. And also, last thing on this, I think that it should be a central location where the DA for the state isn't trying these officers because they're all under the same hook. If I had to try someone that I knew personally, that's the reason why jury duty is so important. If you have relationships with someone that's being tried in the case, you cannot serve on as a juror because you know that person. That's the same thing with a district attorney. A district attorney or prosecutor in a case, state case, can't prosecute law enforcement the same way they would do someone that they didn't know because it's a relationship. It's like doing negotiations against yourself. So I think it has to be a central location where law enforcement get tried if and when things happen. Because, you know, look, it will be other instances that, you know, things will happen and it will be excessive use of force. And that process, they need to get tried and expedited when things like that happen.
Yeah, and, you know, we're hearing some interesting ideas now in Minneapolis. I know they're talking about if there's someone that, you know, there's a drug incident, they'll send out an addiction expert. If there's a mental health crisis, they'll send out a therapist or someone that's an expert with mental health. You know, they basically said we don't need someone with a gun to always be there showing up. Obviously, there are situations where if there's violence or a shooter or something like that, then you'd send a cop. But it sounds like policing as a whole is kind of going to be under the microscope, and hopefully we can figure out a better way to do this. And I agree, people from the community leading and being involved, it makes way more sense because they know the people. Just one or two more things here. You said at the end of your Players Tribune article, you know, so many media outlets and brands that were silent in the past are now showing their support for Black Lives Matter and George Floyd. You know, it shouldn't have been controversial to say Black Lives Matter ever, but I guess this is better late than never. Do you think this is a turning point, or is there some fear that organizations and media outlets are just saying something because they feel like they have to?
I think it's a combination of two things. I think it is a situation where they're forced to say yes or no. And you can't be politically correct, which I stated in the article. So I think that a lot of people are saying, you know what? We all can universally agree that this was a murder that we witnessed and this is wrong. So yes, this is important that I say that this is my position. Now it's important that it doesn't stop there. The conversations don't stop. The resources and what these organizations and high net worth individuals have access to, it's important that they continue to give back to, you know, initiatives in the Black and Brown community specifically, because that's what is lacking. It's lacking financial support. And I know that New York, I also know that Mayor Garcetti here in the state of California, they had pulled like $150 to $160 million of resources from other spaces to make sure that it specifically go back into the Black and Brown communities to, you know, uplift and add and bring things that don't send, you know, individuals down that path of destruction anymore, and try to break the narrative. And I think that people in positions need to continue to try to, you know, be a resource for communities that's disenfranchised, that need to be educated, that need to be informed more, that they give back in a major way, in whatever way that they can, because it's needed now more than ever. And we are in position. We have large platforms. And it's important that we understand and let people know how exactly we feel, and let people know that don't have a voice or are scared to let people know their voice and what they're thinking, that it's okay to speak up and speak out and speak loud.
For sure. And then last thing, if there are listeners right now that want to get involved, they want to help, but they aren't sure how, what would you recommend? Obviously, you know, tweeting and posting on Instagram is nice, but there's more that can be done. What would you tell people that want to help?
Well, look, it's a lot of platforms that you can get involved with. You know, myself, you know, I represent and I'm on the board at the Vera Institute, and I touched on it that we address mass incarceration amongst other things. But the way that you can really help and genuinely help is understanding the history of America, understanding the history of the plight of the Black culture in America, and then, you know, specifically where your energy and your efforts need to go. I don't know if you want to attack social justice. I don't know if you want to bring more awareness, but all those things are needed in specific sites and locations that you can go to educate yourself. It's all over, you, whether it's NAACP platform, whether it's the United Urban League, it's all type of locations and sites, you know, support anti-racist organizations, you know, from the American Civil Rights Liberty Union, the Bail Project, the BlackLifeMatter.com, the Minnesota Freedom Fund, I think it is, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and also the National Bail Fund Network. Like, it's a lot of platforms that you can help and assist. And they don't have to just be financial. They can just be from an education standpoint. They can send you information that, you know, probably you was just, you know, unaware of. You know, I'm still being informed on things that I didn't know, you know, about my people. And I'm learning more and more, and I'm informing and educating as much as I possibly can to others, and using my platform to do that. So if I'm doing that, you know, people from other walks of life should definitely educate themselves on the culture and find out ways that they can assist, because this is a we thing. This isn't just a Black culture thing. This is a we thing. And everybody has to be involved in the conversation to drive real change.
For sure. And we'll include some links to those different resources in the description of this post. So anyone that wants to follow up and look at those resources that Karan was talking about, we'll have the links in the description. Karan, thank you for joining me, man. I appreciate it. I know things are crazy right now, and, you know, you're busy protesting. And again, everyone should go read your article on Players Tribune. It was fantastic. But thanks for taking time to join me. I really appreciate it.
No problem, brother.
Everyone, make sure you follow Karan on Twitter at Real Tough Juice. Follow him on Instagram at Karan Butler. Check out his article on the Players Tribune. And if you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopsite podcast, check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcast, anywhere podcasts are found. Until next time, thanks for listening.